Matty Fresh on the track up his state. And I'm bringing to you live my boys Alec and Nate. Tequila Ty, Jay Nelly, and Zillin in the building. So kick it back, pour the drink. We chillin' because I'm boozing and bitten and ballin' like I'm 2-6 in the blue kicks. Watch me move quick. Yeah, this the blueprint. So who's getting involved? Welcome into the show. This is Booze, Bets, and Ball, baby.
And welcome back to Booze, Bets, and Ball, Penn State football podcast brought to you by Big Banter. Nate's back this week. The other two are not. We're going quick this week, doing a lunchtime show because it's UMass. And next week's Ohio State, and we're going to put a lot more emphasis into that game, obviously. But we're not going to totally overlook UMass because Penn State's coming off a bye week, so you never know what could happen there with how they perform on bye weeks. So just some quick info on UMass here. I don't have a whole lot on them. Let's go. It's homecoming for Penn State. First 3:30 start of the season. I don't know if we've ever gone this long into a season without a 3:30 start. Everything's either been noon or 7:30, which has been interesting. Penn State, 99% chance to win. UMass is 1-6, and the line is -43. Nate, the thing I think we're going to focus on here is more, can Penn State cover this line? More so, can they win this game?
What's the 1% that has to happen for UMass to win this game, though? I mean, there's always a doubt, but like...
Right. I don't know.
The entire 85 scholarship guys would have to be suspended, I think, or something for somehow. That's the only way winning this game, right? They're not winning this game. So to the line bit of it. So it's interesting. UMass is 132nd in points allowed at 39.4. Penn State is second. So they are the diametrically opposed in terms of defenses. And UMass's coach is Don Brown, right?
Yeah.
He was a defensive guru at Michigan. So what the hell? But anyway, so they are going to give up a shit ton of points. I would suppose that this will be Penn State's highest scoring game of the year. And then UMass is allowing or scoring 26.1. So they're not really scoring a ton either. So I'm going to say that 43 is a lot to cover, but I'm going to put this in the 56-7 range or something like that. Well, no, I guess that would be a cover. Yeah. So yeah, I think they're going to cover. 56-7 is what I'm going to go with here. So yes.
Yeah. You know, the thing is to me, I think if Penn State tried the whole game, they could cover this rather easily, possibly within three quarters. The thing is, I don't know what this second half is going to look like, because if Penn State's up 28 to 30-ish points at halftime, I would not let a single defensive starter play in the second half of this game and risk a targeting call that would keep them out of the first half of the Ohio State game. That's just me. I don't care if at the end of the day UMass closes in and this game is 45-20 and it kind of looks like crap. That's not important, honestly, in this this situation here. So that's the one thing where I have reservations about if Penn State could actually cover this game or not. I mean, UMass, they have two quarterbacks, actually. So that Taysom Fomachon, the dude from Clemson that everyone was obsessed with back in 2021 when everyone hated Sean Clifford and wanted a new quarterback. I think we should be happy that that didn't happen because he's at UMass now. So I think that says, kind of where his capabilities are at right now. They had another kid, Carlos Davis. So Fomachon started the year, and then I think he got hurt. And this Davis kid played a couple games, 886 passing yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 picks. And then I'm pretty sure Fomachon came back the last game they played. So
yeah, I don't know if they thrown for 270 a game in the last two games on it.
Yeah. So I don't know. They gave up a lot of yards. They gave up 454 yards per game, including 222 on the ground. And that's where I'd like to see Singleton, and I don't know if Katron Allen is going to play. Obviously, that's something that I did not discuss really with Brant when I had him on. We were going over the Big Ten stuff. I didn't really get into the Penn State game last week, but JB Nelson left the game early on a cart. But then everyone was kind of like, I can't find a play where he got hurt. So I don't know if it was, you know, dehydration or something along those lines. Katron Allen left the game. He was apparently, I know the announcer said when he left the game, he was like, his arm was dangling a little bit, like next to his chest. And then they had a video of him on the sideline, like his jersey pulled up and he was rubbing his stomach. So I don't know, like that to me, that's like a bruise or cracked rib type injury, I would assume, you know, something along those lines, an upper body type injury. So I don't know if he'll play in this game. Trey Potts honestly has looked like the most explosive running back so far this year. So
that is that could go down if Katron Allen is actually injured. That could go down as one of the biggest transfer portal pickups of the year, right? Because he did look good. That, I mean, it was one really good run against Northwestern, but I think it was damn near the longest run of the year for Penn State. Right? So,
yeah, and he scored on that that play action wheel route play that everyone's flipping out
the
about.
Second longest run of the year. Bo Prabula had a 1 yarder, so that's nuts.
Yeah, that is. You know, that's a big thing to me. I just want to see Singleton break one. I think just for his own psyche, for the psyche of the team too, just that we can do this. The sustaining drive thing has worked, and it's worked against lesser competition. Obviously, you shorten the game, you don't run the risk of injury as much. You just get in, get out, and for the most part, they've done that so far this year. Obviously, against Ohio State next week, I don't know if that's going to be the case as much. So just for them to get a couple big chunk plays this week against UMass, I think would be pretty big for our psyche as fans and, you know, for the players themselves, just that they see that they can do this and, you know, get back to where they were last year, where it was a ton of explosive run plays.
For a half and a bit more, Maryland, I mean, they were kind of doing whatever they wanted to Ohio State until they started to turn the ball over and stuff. But, you want to – like, I don't know. Like, I understand there's – when we were talking a couple of weeks ago about explosive plays, there's other people talking about how it doesn't matter and you just sustain drives. You can beat teams to death. Okay, do that. And that's fine, again, when it, like you said, when it's against teams that you are superior to. But now when you have Ohio State soon and then ultimately Michigan, like, you got to find other ways to score, right? Because you can't be one-dimensional. You can't be the stupid 3 yards in a cloud of dust or, like, you know, all of your targets within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage and, I think, move the ball effectively. You have to stretch the field when it comes to that. But so we'll see, but like, let's see. I want to see the.
You brought up how kind of Maryland blew that game. A big part of it was that Ohio State started going down the field. And Marvin Harrison hit on a bunch of chunk plays and scored quick, and that's how, you know, momentum shifts pretty quick there. With when Marvin Harrison has a 70-something yard catch against Maryland, and it went from deep inside Ohio State territory to knocking on the door of the end zone, you know, games change pretty quick. So while the sustaining drive thing does matter, that helps just as much, if not more, especially from a momentum standpoint.
Yeah. Maryland's first half drives, 9 plays, field goal, 8 plays, field goal, 3 and out, 14 plays, touchdown, and then 4 plays for 33 yards, end of half. And then they went 6, 3, 5, 5, 7 for 74 yards and a touchdown, 3 fumble touchdown and 1. So like, it changed for them quite a bit. So like, they had to, they only scored when they were able to, sustain drives, and they still lost by 2 touchdowns. So
You know, I don't know. I'm trying to find something on UMass that makes this game somewhat interesting. And what I realized the most interesting part of this game is going to be is that Penn State's wearing the Generations of Greatness jersey. So you get the white cleats and all that stuff back. So I think that's probably the most intriguing part of this game right now, honestly, because I can't find – and I can't – this – well, as long as we've been doing this, for sure, but even, you know, just going back since Franklin's been here, this is obviously, I think, the easiest game they've had this late in a season.
Yeah. You know,
because usually you're done. Yeah. Usually done with out of conference play by now, but because UMass is an independent, you know, they fill games throughout the whole season. So Penn State had to be in the middle of October here, but I don't think the timing of this game maybe could have been any better because, like I kind of mentioned in the open, Penn State struggles coming off a bye week. So last week was the bye week. Even if Penn State struggles against UMass, they win this game by 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, run the risk of an upset because if this was, let's say, Maryland or I'll even give Rutgers some credit because they haven't looked too bad this year. I don't think Rutgers would beat Penn State in this situation, but I think it'd be a very close game. I think Maryland maybe could sneak up and win this game if it was coming off a bye week with Ohio State the next week.
Yeah.
I think that would be a serious trap game. Whereas now you pretty much get the worst team in FBS coming in and, you know, it doesn't look, you know, you don't worry about losing or having a tough game that your starters need to go deep into the second half when you'd like to either rest them or bench them so they do not get one of those targeting penalties or something like that. So for how much we kind of bitch about Penn State schedules over the years with always starting Big Ten play on the road, this was maybe one of the most perfect scheduling things to happen to them in a while.
So far, yeah. I mean, like, we talked about that early in the year when they, you know, they played Illinois, who should have been a good defense and not so great offense. And then Iowa back, you know, the next game, very similar situation. So that you give the Penn State offense an opportunity to, you know, maybe not be super explosive early in the year because you're playing against inferior offenses yourself and your defense is going to keep you in the game no matter what. And that is what happened. You know, Illinois, they won by 17 and then Iowa by, you know, they destroyed Iowa. And then you get this bye week after like a few teams, even Northwestern going into the year, who we thought would kind of beat us up and be very physical. And now you have UMass as a kind of like scrimmage almost before you get back really in the season. It's damn near perfect. And, you know, this is the most confident I have felt about going into an Ohio State week in forever. And I always picked them to beat Ohio State, but now I kind of mean it, I think, you know. So
yeah, I will say, and this is something I talked about with Brant last week, and I wanted to get at least one of your guys' opinions on it. But does it not feel like Drew Aller just needs to throw an interception at this point to get it over with? Like, to me, I feel like he's like too worried about not throwing one, and maybe they're not taking as many shots down the field as they could be, maybe because of him in a sense, and the fact that he's too afraid to turn the ball over.
If keeping him from throwing an interception is going into the play calling, then that means they don't have a lot of confidence in him. And I don't believe that to be true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be so protective that you're not, the average depth of target is like the lowest it's been for a Penn State team this far in the, and, you know, for as far back as PFF goes. So, I don't think that's true. I'm still like, I'm holding out on the, they're saving stuff for, you know, the big guys kind of thing. And again, they haven't really needed it.
Well, the funny thing is maybe the nicest design play of the season they ran was against Northwestern when the game was over with the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, the play that everyone claims he quote unquote kneeled on.
But then, like, you know, you go back to the very first drive of the year against West Virginia and he took a shot. You know, that was a beautiful pass kind of on the move. And he's got the ability to do it, obviously. And just, again, he hasn't needed to do it. So let's be optimistic and think that that's why, right? He hasn't done it because he hasn't needed to.
That's true. You know, a part of me is just like,
West Virginia, who's like, only has one loss and is receiving votes in the AP, by the way.
West Virginia could legitimately go 10-2 because they play Oklahoma towards the end of the year. I think they'll lose that. But no one else on their schedule, I don't think, is better than them right now.
Yeah.
They play Houston this week, who sucks.
Yeah, Thursday night in town.
They got over TCU, a team they haven't beaten in like 13 years or something. So that, you know, that was a big win for them. I think they could go 10-2, which they'd be ranked if they were 10-2 with losses to just Penn State and Oklahoma, right? Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, they're in a Power 5 conference, right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so they'd be top 15, maybe top 20 at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't think they'd have an overly impressive win, but they wouldn't have a bad loss either. It's kind of the way I look at it.
You're going to see a lot of like likely 3 and 4 loss teams ranked by that time of the year. So, I mean, they still have BYU, who's only got one loss. UCF is not terrible. They're going to lose to Oklahoma and then Cincinnati Baylor. So, and Oklahoma State. So, yeah, I don't know. If they go 10-2, they'll absolutely be ranked.
Yeah. The funny thing is they've had like no quarterback play and they've still,
beaten it. It's like we talked about with Mountaineer Paul or whatever. Like, you wanted Penn State to kick their ass, and then like you want to root for them every game going forth, and that's how it is with every team you beat. So,
yeah, the way it's shaping up, with it looks like Oklahoma probably goes undefeated now and makes the playoff, unless Texas gets them in the Big 12 championship,
and then they both make the playoff. Yeah,
and then there's FSU, who. Florida, maybe at the end of the year, could get them, but still, it's an out-of-conference. No, it's an out-of-conference game, so even if they lose that, they're going to the ACC championship, and if they win that, they're in. And then, obviously, Georgia's starting to look like Georgia again, so if they, you know, go undefeated, all of a sudden, the idea of two Big Ten teams getting in looks less and less every week that goes on here. So,
Florida State has to still play Duke. They still have to play Miami, and then, like you said, Florida. So,
yeah, the thing with Duke is I don't know. Riley Leonard's hurt, I think. I don't know how long he's going to be out. But, yeah, the idea of two Big Ten teams getting in, you know, the champion, and then you pick one other team.
Yeah, like I think this was the year where we talked about it early on that it was very unlikely, right? Because – you're going to get the Pac-12 champion likely this year. You should probably get the ACC champion. No matter what happens, you're going to get the SEC champion, and then you're only left with one more spot, which is likely the Big Ten champion. So,
yeah, I think they're going to have
Oklahoma too, right? So conceivably, one of the Power 5 champions could be left out.
Yeah, and, you know, normally, like last year, the Pac-12 champion was Utah, had 3 losses, so it wasn't even like a discussion. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think you're legitimately looking at all 5 power conference champions with 1 or 0 losses.
Yeah.
So the committee is going to have a horrible time sorting through that. And, you know, I guess it depends on who from the Pac-12 it is, but with the amount of ranked teams that are out there right now, like it's hard to argue that you could leave them out if the team has 1 or 0 losses. So, you know, does it come down to Oklahoma versus the Pac-12 champion for who they take?
Oregon's schedule for the rest of the year is this week at Washington, home against Washington State, who's 19th, then at Utah, and Cam Rising should be back by then if they wish to go with him. Then Cal sucks, and then they play USC at home and then at Arizona State. So, like, I mean, that's 4. They still have 4 games against teams in the top 19. If they go even 1 loss in that, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Washington plays Oregon, Arizona State, Stanford. Those 2 suck. At USC, Utah at home, and then at Oregon State. How did they not play Washington State? They don't play Washington State? I must have missed a game, too. Yeah, because Oregon plays Oregon State last, so I missed. It wasn't pulled up. And then Washington plays Washington State. So if any of those teams have 1 loss, and you could probably argue that if multiple of those teams have 1 loss, that's as good as if Penn State and, say, Michigan have 1. If Penn State has 1 loss and Michigan's undefeated, right? Like, it's this should have been the year of the 12-team playoff, because there are so many stacked good teams this year.
Yeah, I think the committee, when it comes down to it, they're going to be wishing it was a 12-team playoff too, because I think no matter what they do, they're going to get some heat if things stay along the way it's looking like they're going to go.
Yeah. Chaos will reign, though, I think. And
yeah, we'll see.
This will be the year Penn State's 11-1, beats Ohio State, somehow loses to Michigan, even if they lose by 1 point, right, and Michigan wins the conference. Mm-hmm. Misses the playoff. It would just be the most sad thing in the world.
It would be. Yeah, I'm glad we got to fill some time because I just cannot talk about UMass for more than 5 minutes, if I'm being honest. There's nothing there that excites me. I don't know. I know I tweeted this. The stretch of Northwestern bye week UMass, I don't know if I've ever been more bored with practically a month of Penn State football before. Like, I know people are like, oh, well, you still get to watch the team. Yeah, I know. But, like, in terms of, like, it's hard to look forward to those games is what I'm saying, especially when, you know, you have Ohio State and Michigan still coming up.
2003 to 2004, or 2002 through 2004, once kind of they hit that skid and they, like, weren't very good. That was not a fun time to watch Penn State football. But
yeah,
you weren't around back then. So you
don't know. I was around. I just don't remember it.
And then, you know, then in 2005, when they had the last second win against Northwestern is when it kind of got exciting again. So, yeah. Anyway, you got the Phillies to still look forward to this week.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
I want them to win. Astros gave up like 5 runs in 3 innings the other day, and that sucked.
Saw that.
Anyway, good time. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, next week we'll be back with
everything.
A lot of stuff. All four of us will be back, and the guys from the Ohio pod will be coming over, and I guess I'll be going over there to talk about this game. I'm interested to talk to them because I talked to them before the season. And I just want to see if their perceptions have changed a little bit. I don't know if mine have that much on Ohio State. They're kind of what I expected in a sense. So I'm interested to have those. I don't know. We'll see.
I agree. Kyle McCord doesn't look like CJ Stroud.
No. So
that's good. So, we need that to continue for like 2 more games. And then after that, I don't care what happens. But
yeah. So really quick, for this game, I think I'm going to go 49-10. I don't think they cover. I think it'll be close, but I bet a little under. I just think that Penn State's gonna pull starters and not really care what happens in the second half here as they look forward to Ohio State.
Okay, so I still say 56-7, and they might pull starters, but then Bo Pergulo will run like 35 times and have 2 or 3 touchdowns. So
yeah, I could see that too. All right, that's gonna do it for this one. We'll see you next week.